different authorities have spoken to this subject. But let me quote something very interesting from Albert Einstein, who says, everybody's a genius, but if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it will live its whole life believing that it is stupid. And so that's from Albert Einstein. These are the arguments for the motion. The arguments against the motion are numerous. But somebody just pulled out from right here in Ghana the curriculum of an international school doing the usual Montessori or international baccalaureate program and just pulled out the particular aspect of the curriculum that was of interest to me. The subjects that they were doing in their extracurricular activity, ballet, drumming and dancing, band practice, choir practice, drama club, scouts, karate, soccer, music, bead making, swimming, art, and pottery. And so there are strong arguments for and strong arguments against. I'm reminded that my resource persons do not necessarily have to be at different parts of the spectrum. In fact, the position they're taking does not necessarily represent what they believe or what they stand for, but they are robustly going to present their thoughts to educate all of us about the pros and cons. And so tonight, if you have your own thoughts about this issue, send them to us by WhatsApp 024-9999-555 or post them on our Facebook pages, Legacy and Legacy or Springboard, the Virtual University. But let me start with the person arguing for the motion tonight. He's a known name and a known face, educational consultant and researcher and author, Anis Hafa will be speaking for the motion. Anis, welcome to Springboard.
Thank you.
Good to see you, sir.
My pleasure.
Right. Arguing against the motion, another good friend of Springboard, you've been here on the show before, Araba Middleton Butre. She's the Director of Admissions and Financial Aid at Ashesi University. Araba, thank you for coming.
Thanks.
Right. So we will, beyond my initial thoughts that I've shared about the subject, we've listened to different authorities, we've watched YouTube programs, different people speaking for and against the motion. There are country-specific issues, there are global issues. But let's educate our listeners tonight on this subject. Our current educational system, does it destroy talents or not? If you are a parent listening tonight, you want to just send us your own thoughts by WhatsApp or stand by to call us when you open the phone lines a bit later in the program. But let me go straight to Anis to set us off on this discussion. And so, speaking for the motion, Anis, let's give you 8 minutes to bring us up to speed. Does our current educational system destroy talents? Everybody's smiling.
Well, I'll put it another way. Our current education system does not encourage creativity. I think it destroys talent. And, you know, I've been an advocate for creativity in education in Ghana, I would imagine, since I arrived from the U.S. in 1995. Now, the issue was this. You know, I look at my own education in France, in Cape Coast, where the important thing was to be able to have access, be able to have information at your disposal. And in fact, I brought one of the exercise books that I used when I was in Cape Coast, really? In France, in 1961. And wow. It's a book on geography. So it's all about what it is that you know. And you copy the notes, and then you memorize as much of it as you can. And then you're able to draw maps. You put in the dry season, the wet season, the capitals, and that sort of thing. And then you do examinations, and then they score you. 10 over 10 is very good. You know, but then the education at that time, I think, was slated for working in the civil service. So the idea is that, you know, this was, I mean, I was in France in 1961. This was a situation where after the 1957, we needed people to work in the civil service. So the most important thing is not that you are thinking and being creative, because the systems have been set up for you and you just go there and you work. Now, it's unfortunate that still in 2016, we are teaching along the same lines. People to chew, pour, pass, forget, and at the end of the day, be poor as a result of it. Now, this is the dilemma of education. But the issue is not just in Ghana now. I mean, in my travels, you realize that there are a lot of countries who are now making the inroads into having young people begin to think their own thoughts, begin to do things for themselves. And out of that, of course, is creativity. What has happened to us with the past 20 years or so, it's people who have taken it upon themselves to do great things. And I'm talking about Steve Jobs. He's not a chew, poor, pass person. I mean, look at what it is that he's done for humanity. The same with Mark Zuckerberg, Bill Gates, the rest of it, Jeff Bezos. So the things are changing. I remember I used to coordinate a program in the U.S. called the Gifted and Talented Education. And it was not based on true poor pass at all. It was based on people's creativity. And, you know, they start in the first grade. So that the focus was not really on academics per se. The focus was really on a project that you can do. And the project you can do is really a project that you have designed for yourself. Some hypothesis. What if something happens? What if you think a certain way? What if you add one chemical to another? What to happen if you were to walk in fire? You know, those were the kinds of creative activities that were done. Now, check this. At the end of the day, they use the blue ribbon prizes for young people because what they do is that's a big deal at the end of the year. It's not your exam scores. The big deal is that they invite businesses to come and listen to young people. They invite Congress people. They invite assembly people. They invite business people to come and listen to these young people. But what it does is that we have someone who's in the first grade. They don't have front teeth, but they have a project. And they speak to the things that they've done in a very confident way. And where we have people who even ask questions in terms of how they did what they did, how they're going to do the next time around and so on. Now, what that does is that it promotes talent, it promotes creativity. And then the issue is this. At the end of the day, you begin to realize that education, it depends on you. What is it that you can do with it? Now, come the second year, you might work on the same project in an extended basis as a form of inquiry, or you can enter some other kind of project based on a new kind of aspiration that you have. But the important thing is that you transfer the learning process from the successes of successes or failures from initial project into other things. Now, check this. The issue we have in Ghana is this. In the elementary school, lower primary, we are sitting, listening, and reproducing information for 3 years. We go into the upper primary, another 3 years, we do the same thing. Then we go to JHS, another 3 years, we do the same thing. That's 9 years right there. And then we go to secondary school, another 3 years. We go to university, another 4 years. So look at this. This a human being who has been sitting for 16 years of their lives. And then you release these people to be creative. I mean, that is one of the saddest things that we do in this country. And what really is happening is that we are destroying our youth because our human capacity is not being developed at the level where we can begin to add value to who we are. Where we can begin to develop the confidence that, yes, I can excel in a particular area that has been defined by me. So what I'm saying is this. The most important thing is that we have to learn to read and write properly. You know, once you can read and write, my goodness, you can read anything. You can read history. You can read geography. You can read psychology. You can read philosophy. But you have to learn to read first and then read to learn. I think that is what is missing in our culture. But then the issue was this. I remember I was at Legon some months back, and I was talking to students who have done their first degrees and are now back in the university to do a master's degree. So, you know, I asked a simple question. Based on what Kwejo Agri used to say in 1925, don't tell me what you know. Show me what you can do. So the question is this. You pose a question like this to graduate students, and frankly, they can't even look at you in the eye. Because they are not used to thinking on their own. And I'll be honest with you, not one could pinpoint a particular thing that they can do. So now, when they were released into the society, after their first degree, they realized that they were dysfunctional. Basically illiterate in terms of being functional with any particular kind of skills. Because they didn't have them. So now they've come back to do the graduate work, and they're being taught the same way. So that is really disheartening. Now, the issue is this. Where do we go from here? Because creativity and talent go together. You might have a talent, but you might have to be able to nourish it. So it comes back to who are these people who are training our young people to be so disabled? That is the question. And then you realize that we have about 38 teacher training centers in this country. And in 2016, People are being taught the same way to memorize things, to do true and false, multiple choice and so on. And, you know, and that's really disheartening. We have to begin to understand that these things cannot continue because we are really destroying the talent in this country. Now, what really bothers me is that I've taught many nationalities in my life. I've taught Koreans, I've taught Chinese, I've taught Mexicans, I've taught Filipinos. You realize that the cognitive abilities of human beings are the same thing. But how do we raise our young people? You know, so you come back to Africa, where especially in Ghana, Ghana is supposed to be one of the leaders as far as education. But even that, you know, we are shortchanging our young people, and we have to begin to understand that the manner and the ways in which we teach the teachers themselves have to change. Because what we're doing traditionally is that in class one, you are in a box. You go into class two, they move you from one box to the other. You go to class three, they move you from a second box to a third box, over and over again. And that itself does not define the right kind of architecture, a school architecture, that to even help people to exceed, to excel. Now, the last point I'll raise is this. I was at MIT last year, and when you enter their science lab, the first thing that you see is a huge question mark. And the question is this: what are your interests? What is your passion? What is it that you want to do to add value to who we are? What is a particular solution that you want to be able to develop so that you can solve a societal problem? And then you want to tie that in with some kind of entrepreneurship, because especially if you begin to look at Ghana, where the civil service itself is bloated in many, many ways, we don't want to continue producing the same kind of people who are not productivity-oriented. So these are the difficulties that we have. So back to the question, do we encourage creativity? I haven't seen it. And it's about time that we begin to look at that. If you go to schools and you ask children, what is it that you're going to do? The children themselves will tell you there's a particular thing that they want to do, but they don't want to tell you that they're going to learn something. There's something that they want to do. So the focus in terms of being creative focuses on the things that we have to do with our hands. We make our mistakes. There are things that we want to do. There's something that we want to do for society and so on. Because our human resource capability in any country is what's going to drive the country. And unless people are innovative, where they are creative, where they are developing a curiosity, where they are learning to solve problems, where they even anticipate being millionaires and billionaires, I think we're really shortchanging our kids. And at the end of it, they fail examinations, and where do we find them? We find them on the streets, selling sachet water. It's the worst thing that any society can do to its people.
It is 20 minutes past the hour of 7 o'clock, and Anis Hafa just made some strong points about the educational system and its negative impact on creativity and by extension on talent. He spoke very passionately about a subject that he's spoken about for so many years. Before I bring on board Araba Middleton-Bucci to give us her arguments against the motion, let me just give you some thoughts about what Anis has been saying. And just by the way, I've just posted a picture of a 55-year-old geography book talking about the natural vegetation of South America. At that point, I'm sure he had not even seen any town in South America before, but he was chewing and pouring about the natural vegetation of South America. I've showed you all the rivers and everything that you want to see about South America, and it's right there on Facebook. If, in case you just want to see the pictures of tonight's debate, you can join us on Facebook Live and actually see live and interactive footage of tonight's debate. And so Anis's points are mainly about the fact that the origin, the style, the design of our education at the time was just to favor the production of a stream of people to work in the civil service that at the time needed so many people who were going to work in a STEM that was already laid out. But he looks at people who have made an impact like Steve Jobs, like Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, among others, and says creative education is what made them who they are. Cited the first grade project hypothesis or scenario modeling exercise and talked about the impact on children and how it helped them to present with confidence at a time when they didn't even have front teeth. He also spoke about the design of our educational system and the fact that you do 16 years of sitting and you cannot be creative after that. He also spoke to the quote by Kweji Agri, who asked about, don't tell me what you know, tell me what you can do. And he says many people today cannot answer that question. He challenged us by saying that he has met people from different countries and literally they are the same. The difference is mainly how they are educated. He ended with a question mark about the at the science lab at MIT and said, the question at the very beginning is, what can you do? What is your interest? What is your passion? And how can you make a positive contribution? In his opinion, without making changes, we'll end up producing people who stand by the roadside and sell without making any significant contribution. Anis, give me an idea about anything you want to say in support of Arabi's side,
Something, you've been so articulate. That is very good. You want to answer, didn't you? 10 over 10.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, man.
What you in for?
Okay, tell me, what do you want me to do now?
No, give something to Araba. It's for balance. It's very important.
You want me to speak on her initial?
Before I actually hand over to her,
yes.
Tell me, is there anything that has caught your attention that is being done right? Are there any examples? You yourself, you've traveled around, you've hung out at many schools, you've observed that which you're not happy about and that which you're happy about. Are there a couple of examples of places that are getting it right?
Fantastic. Very good. Araba and I are together. Okay, there's no debate for me as far as I'm concerned. We are working together to make sure things happen. You know, when I was growing up, I started school in a village in Tutuka, Obuasi. We didn't have any shoes on our feet.
That's my grandmother's village.
We didn't have any shoes on your feet. Now, look at children going to school now. You know, not only do they have shoes, they have socks. And they are well-dressed, you know. It's motivating. I love to see that because I never saw that in my time. Now, even if you go into the villages, and I've done a lot of training in the villages, in the districts and so on, you see little kids, when it's raining, these kids are walking in the rain. They want to go to school. When I go back to the same school to do some kind of testing afterwards in the dry season, the dust is blowing. Those kids are going to school. So that is, to be honest with you, that's what drives my passion. In the sense that the young people are ready. But what we have to begin now is to add value to who these young people are. Because they know for sure that education means a lot to them. So in terms of the positive attitudes that we want to begin to look at, I look at it from children. It's not from the teachers. It's from the children.
Right. And so that was the voice of Anis Hafa. Anis is an educational consultant, very passionate about the issue of teaching and learning. Equally passionate is Araba Middleton Butcher. She is the Director of Admissions and Financial Aid at Ashesi University. Araba has been in education all her life and didn't hesitate at all to come on the show because it's almost like playing right up her lane. Araba, you are arguing against the motion that our current educational system destroys talent. Take it up.
Right, Albert, and good to be here. And Anis, I would say that on some level I do agree with you to some extent. And I think the situation could even be worse than you've described it. You know, I came across an article, a research that was commissioned by the British Council, and they had interviewed a number of students from various universities in Ghana. And with the exception of one university they mentioned, none of the students interviewed could say, I have this skill, after going through the system as you described it. So that is cause for worry. That makes you think that maybe, just maybe, our educational system is destroying talent. But where I differ is that what I see as the restrictive nature of what we say as our current system of education. What is our current system of education? Education, as I see it, has multiple layers: formal, informal, public, private. You could be looking at in the classroom, built environment, or just anywhere. So I'm looking at our educational system in an extensive way, okay? And when I look at it that way, then I think, much as I may agree with you on some level, all hope is not lost, okay? So I'd like to go and say, what is talent? The we're saying it destroys talent. That natural ability, and I'm speaking that from the Oxford Dictionary, the natural ability or aptitude to do something and do it well. Okay? So are we saying that in essence, Ghana's existing arrangement to provide a systematic instruction destroys that unique ability for our young ones who are subjected to that system? Yes and no. I look at our primary system. We're talking about the 6 years, 3 years, 4 years. Along the path, you take primary school. There are a number of clubs. There are a number of extracurricular activities that build skills that are not taught in the classroom setting. You see kids doing cultural dancing, poetry, you know, during speech day. It may not be widespread, but there's some level of structure to help harness talent as and when they are discovered. You go to our SS systems. You're talking about talent. We have the Intako schools, right? I found out that Prince Tego, who we know as the Prince of Goals, so Koforidua Sektek, it was during sports that his talent was identified. He may just be one. Wuta Kobi, Kofinti, music, entertainment in the secondary schools. That's where some of those talents were discovered and nurtured. Gospel musicians, Albert, you and I know Josephine Jumesi, who's now Mrs. Ankoma. It was when we were in Wesley Girls that those may be few examples, but my take is that if you look at it as a holistic system and not just the typical academic focus, but we're looking at it as a broad spectrum, then we can look at and say that there are, maybe not widespread, but there are opportunities to unearth talents. Look at John Tay Memorial School. See the kids playing instruments, you know. So recently, SOS, Hermana Minor, the students put up a beautiful production of Muntu by Jody Graft, right? Wesley Girls, you see kids go there the night before speech day every day. They've dubbed it the literary night. Poetry recitals, drama productions led by the students. And these are there. They're unearthing talents. We're talking about talents. There's sports, there's music, there's a wide spectrum. We may not have the formal structures, but I think there are provisions to help unearth some of these talents. I see the West Eagles Cadet Corps playing and marching with such precision. That's discipline, which they need for future life, right? You go to schools, there's choirs, and that's why I say that I may differ with you slightly on the fact that we're killing talents. No. If we look strictly at education as the teacher standing in front of a student telling you 1 + 1 = 2, and the people of Sarawak, I detested it. Why was my geography teacher telling me the people of Sarawak when I didn't even know where Sarawak was? You look at it in that aspect, it may not help me. I look at Legon. I had a bad experience. A lecturer asked me in front of my mates, "Are you questioning me?" Because I dared to share a different opinion. That could have ended my public speaking skill, right? But then there were other avenues for me. So I'm trying to look at this whole thing in a broader sense. Look at Ashesi as an institution. It's not just doing the two-poor pass. So we're looking at ethical education, ethical leadership. We're focused on projects, entrepreneurship, a whole range. So I would say that although not widespread, there are interventions along the system. That's not a perfect system. And so I don't think we're killing talent. Maybe the discourse should actually be, what is working right? And can we elevate the conversation? Can we look at these best practices that may not be so widespread? Because we want a holistic education. That I agree with you. Can we look at the best practices in terms of those institutions, those activities, programs in our along our educational system that are helping to unearth these talents and then bring them to the fore, engage people, and see how we can replicate that. So, Albert, that's my take.
32 right. minutes. I mean, even Anise was nodding his head. I mean, he couldn't help it.
Me and you.
32 minutes past the hour of 7 o'clock, and if you know what my job is to just synthesize the thoughts of these resource persons and try and bring them to your attention. And let me just remind you, you can actually watch these pictures live on Facebook, and I have comments coming in from all over the world, from America, from Ghana here, and from different countries. People who are watching us live making their contributions, and I'll bring them to you in a couple of minutes. But let me just bring Araba's thoughts home. She played it safe by first siding with Anise and agreeing with him that the points he was making, in fact, there were even wilder ones she could add. And she says, from a British Council research that she was privy to, a number of university students were interviewed, and very few, or literally none, could describe what skill they believed they had. She started her presentation by broadening the definition of our current educational system to encompass formal and informal, public and private. She says it goes beyond that which you will do in built environments to that which you will do in open environment. And she says a talent is a natural ability to do something and to do it very well, a natural aptitude and ability to do something and do it well. She cited clubs and societies, extracurricular activity. She mentioned cultural dancing and other performances at speech day. She mentioned intercourse, and then went on to list a few people that have made it in the public space that she said were a product of the extracurricular activities, including Prince Tagore, Wuta Kofi Ntie, and gospel musicians such as Josephine Ankuma that she mentioned, who was a schoolmate. And then she also talked about the Jonte model that has been celebrated for a long time as a place where music talents are developed. She talked about drama productions that have become very popular in many schools today, poetry recitals, school choirs, and cadet corps. Araba believes that while it may not be widespread, there are a lot of success stories that we can point to. And she says if we define education as the formal teaching by teachers with chalk and whiteboards, then we will say there's very little to celebrate, but there is so much that we can look at. She mentioned that Shesi model and says really all these interventions must be something that we look at, and maybe we should redefine this argument and see where are we getting it right and what are we doing wrong that we should do, so that we can point out to some of the best practices and then use them as springboard to build a better educational system. What do you yourself think about this discussion? Right there on Facebook, a number of people are commenting. Amaya Boa says, this is a big issue. We must take a good look at our education, and it is making a lot of sense. Nanada Zigansa, writing from Kentucky, says, I feel so passionate about this topic. Jerome Autry says, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant show. Janet Wintum, writing from Pennsylvania, says, what is your passion? What is your interest? And how can you make a difference? Love that. The Zafa says, Anise on point. Exciting stuff. Nanagansa is back and he says, sometimes their biggest problem are parents who project their desires onto their children and refuse to recognize the passion of their offspring. It's the age-old problem. Even Mozart faced this problem. It's only after he rebelled that he graced the world with his symphonies and operas. Right. And so, those are some of the thoughts that have been shared. Let me take a brief musical break. When I come back, let's do some cross-pollination of ideas, and let's bring on board some parents and teachers to say, are we getting this discussion right, or there are some other perspectives we may just have missed? If you just joined us, this is Pros and Cons on Springboard, your virtual university. My guests, Anise Hafa and Araba Middleton-Butchery, we are trying to find out, does our current educational system destroy talents, or is there hope for us? Please don't go away. This discussion is about the educational system and whether it does or does not destroy talents. I'm going to be bringing on board very shortly a teacher, a person very passionate about reforming our education. But let me just quickly get Anise to comment on the thoughts that Araba shared. I'm sure you were nodding your head and you had some quick positions you want to take on the subject. So let me give you a chance to react to Araba's thoughts, and then
Araba, I enjoy listening to you. And especially when you say that all is not lost. You know, when you're a teacher, you are doomed to be optimistic. in the sense that
you can optimism.
You know, if you show no optimism, then you have no business teaching anybody. So I you know, your point is well taken. But you want to also begin to understand that the bigger strides are being made in the public schools. In the private schools, like at Chessy. I used to teach a leadership seminar there. Mm-hmm. And also, I also did some training at John Tay with a jazz program. Mm-hmm. Not only that, for the first time, I got children P4, P4, 5, and 6 to write their own literature books, you know, so that while they were, when these kids were in JHS 1, JHS 2, their books were being taught as legitimate and bona fide literary material alongside Chinua Achebe, Ole Soyinka, and everybody else. But then what you have to do, I mean, I enjoy listening to you because the talent is there. But how do we bring it up? I've also done projects with some private schools where we have young people who haven't even done the BECE who extend the science projects in the science textbooks into community, where they go to measure blood pressure, where for the first time the whole community line up, and some of them have never been to a doctor hospital before. They have young people, 12, 13, 14, test their blood pressure. So those possibilities are there. So the issue was this: how come we haven't extended all over the country? Because now, if you look at 271,000 people who are unemployed and they finish the university, then you ask yourself, what on earth did we do to these people for them to become so dysfunctional? Knowing very well, like you say, that we can have musical geniuses out of them. And there was another project that I saw at Tema International School, right, where they produced Serafina. And you know, I've seen a lot of projects in my life, in Hollywood, Birmingham, and the rest of it. This was one of the best that I've seen by Ghanaian people, Ghanaian children. So what I'm saying is this: we have to move further, because, you know, I think you've cited fantastic examples, but these should not be the exceptions. Right. They have to be regular. They have to be mainstreamed so that we bring out the possibilities of Ghanaians. Because I'm very confident that our kids can do it.
Mainstreaming is a point that Anise is making. Let me just read you a quote that represents the thoughts of several authorities in this subject, including Sir Ken Robinson, who's had several TED Talks on this subject. And he says, the issue with our educational system is that it kills creativity because it measures intelligence by a one-size-fits-all form. It says math is better than painting, chemistry is more impressive than dance, and history more useful than poetry. And the question is, why? And so basically what these authorities are saying is that really what our education system does is this: when you have your children and you see them, you don't say, let me hold on a minute, is this Kujo or is this Amma? It says the moment you see your children, you can tell which one is Kujo, which one is Amma, which one is Kwesi. So if you can distinguish your children just by seeing them, it means that you are also appreciating that each child is different. And so why do you think one type of education should fit all? We must move progressively towards the point where it's not just about exams, but it's about understanding each child and their peculiar needs so that we can get the best out of them. Arab, just comment on that for a minute, and then we'll bring on board some other voices to speak to this subject. And if you have any thoughts on this subject, the number to call 0244340437. You want to call, 0302216541. 0302216541. You want to comment on this debate and make your own contribution to the subject of education and whether we are nurturing or destroying talents. Arabat, one size fits all. What's your comment on that?
And Albert, as I said earlier, if we look at just what we term as formal education, then we stand the risk of saying indeed it destroys talent. I've seen what I see around is our kids, it's as if they're being moved along an assembly line. They're moving. And then at the end of the day, we're trying to see if they meet the standards of production. So A is perfect, B is good, C is average, you know, that kind of thing. But what I'm saying is that even though that might seem to be the standard, there's more to education than that. And so even though that formal structure does not allow us to look at each child as unique, there are other avenues within that educational system My beef there is to say, again, how are we making sure it's not restricted to few places? But there are avenues for identifying talent and nurturing them. And that's where I also agree with Anise that let's move the conversation beyond this and say, how can we make that paramount to the A's and B's?
Right. Kamla Dati, who earlier on wrote and said his name is the Zafa Zafa, Kamla says, Anise, have you seen the proposed educational bill 2016? And if you have, what is your view on it? So when I come back from this break, I'll be finding out from you, Anise, whether you have seen the proposed educational bill for 2016, and if you have any thoughts on it. But have you seen that bill?
No, I haven't.
Right. So there's somebody trying to find out if you have seen the bill and if you have any thoughts.
And I'll, if they can send it to me, I'll appreciate it too.
All right. So
they can send it to me through you.
Right. So just send it to us, info@legacyandlegacy.com.gh. We'll forward it to Anise and we'll get some perspective on it. But if you have seen it yourself and you have any thoughts on it, why don't you call into the show, 0302216541. Let me ask my guest, have you seen any model? Because it seems that based on the feedback we are getting and the analysis we are making, it seems to be that the flexibility that the private schools provides allows them to integrate much more of these concepts into their curriculum or the design of the education. Let me just ask, are there any models that you have seen that you say, ideally, if I had my own way, this is the way it should be done? And can you describe it just so that, I mean, really, those listening can say, well, let's go look at this model and let's learn from it. Are there any models
right.
you've seen?
Well, the first thing that I will say is that even the architecture of modern education institutions are changing, especially for the 21st century. That's why I made reference to class one is in a box. They move to class two is another box and so on. Things are changing where now, let's say in your first period, you are learning, let's say you are in a science lab, for example, or let's say you are learning theory. In your second period, you are not sitting and listening anymore. You are on your feet, practicing what it is that you are learning to do. The next time around, you are again on your feet where in an assembly setting, there are people there who want to hear you, to see what it is that you've done. What are the mistakes that you've made in the past? What is that you want to do in the future? So even architecture is being designed. Now, I mean, all of our public schools, forget about the village, go to Ghana, I mean Accra. It's a sitting culture. But the worst thing that we can do is that we have people, like I said earlier, who sit for 16 years. And we are creatures of habit. And you drop them into a ministerial office and we expect them to perform. You know, these are some of the worst things that we can do. But again, we want to also begin to look at this. We also want to look at the physical structures themselves and ask yourself if they lend themselves to any creativity.
Right.
How on earth can we have a school where there are no toilets? Or let's say you're a girl who is in a particular time in her period where she has to use the bathrooms, where does she go?
Right.
You know, once we restrict these psychological things, the basic human needs, let me tell you, the creativity disappears from our system.
So
we are looking at other things more important than creativity at that point, which is what our human needs are.
Right, so you're talking about even the design of the classrooms. When I come back from this, I'm going to take a few comments. When I come back, I'm going to ask you a very important question. I have advocated for some time that three subjects must be taught from class one. One of them is how to discover your talent. The other one is entrepreneurship. And the other one is investment. And I'm saying that in teaching these three subjects, they shouldn't be taught like the way we teach them to adults. It must be broken down into stories, practice, and exercises. When I come back from this break, I'm going to ask you your thoughts on this subject. It's a crusade I am so passionate about. But let me see. Let me read a few comments. Okay, so Kamla Dati says she's viewing from London. Ama Yabua says, hello from Texas. Our education is not raising the majority of people to be world changers. Mavis Fuga is fascinated by the fact that you have mentioned Jonte because she's a product of Jonte and she's watching from Finland. Jerome Ochery says, intercollegiate sports are collapsing if they haven't already collapsed because we've got a lot to do to get the best from our students in this country. The very system on which our education runs doesn't doesn't bring out the best in us in terms of talents. Nana Gansa says education should be tailored to enhance talent and improve creativity and not the other way around. And so if you have your thoughts, you can share them on our Facebook pages or you can join the discussion by calling to the show 030-221-6541. Arabi, let me come to you. Entrepreneurship in class one. Investment in class one. Talent development in class one. Your thoughts?
Albert, I think it's very possible. And if we put our minds to it, it would again shift the conversation from the minority that we have, like the limited aspect of nurturing, discovering and nurturing, to that being the prominent aspect of our education. I would start from Ashesi, which is what I'm used to or what I know now. Students come to us, and the first thing we ask them is, what do you think? And they're like, am I supposed to have an opinion? No, seriously. And they can remember a point in their life when they were told you were too known, and so it cut off their creativity. I'm being honest with you. So, and you're not telling them, we want you to be too known. So we're kind of undoing what the damage, so to say, that has been done. And if we can, some of us were fortunate. We had parents who were teachers who would ask you, even when they're caning you, they ask you, why am I caning you? You still have to explain why they're caning. You know, but you know what I called, again, it's ultra. People think children should be seen and not heard. So it goes beyond just the education. It takes its root from our culture. I'm telling you, the older one tells you what to do.
Right.
So we've got, culture is dynamic. So as we move, we should be able, and it's possible.
Well, talking about parents and the impact on our thinking, our philosophy, let me say good evening to my friend Kirsten, who talks about his mother who had such great emotional intelligence that even before she would beat him, she would call him with a soft voice and say, Kweku, come here, let me beat you. Not unlike that, the regular parent will be so upset. He says his mother will not even raise her voice. Kweku, come and let me beat you. So good evening, Kiesa. I'm sure you're enjoying the show tonight. And he's talking about parents. My mother did something that inculcated investment in my mind in a way I still can't believe. She wanted me to learn how to save. And so in one particular term, when I was first in class, she took me to a Kingsway shop. And said a store and said to me, she was buying me a shoe. She showed me a very nice, I chose a very nice brown ankle high shoes. And just before she bought it, she told me, this is 39 cedis, 99 pesos. Would you like me to put it in your account? And just by the way, do you know how much that can do if it is invested in an account and it grows for this number of years? By the time she finished describing it, I had lost appetite for ankle high brown shoes and all my life. Anytime I see an ankle high brown shoe, I think if I buy it, I'm wasting all my money.
You can do better.
Yes, I can do better. But that was a very simple way to get me to understand delayed gratification. Can parents help? Is it possible to teach children about investment, entrepreneurship, and such subjects in their very foundational years?
First of all, congratulations, because I know you've been pushing this for a long time, and God bless you, so I become successful in it. You know, nowhere in my life was it told to me that it's important to know the value of money in that way. And you know, there's this joke with the Nigerians where you are teaching a Nigerian class one kid, what's 10 plus 10? And the kid doesn't know what it is. And then the father said, someone said, you are teaching him the wrong way. Ask him, 10 naira and 10 naira, when you put it together, what is it? Everybody knows that. Nobody 20 naira. You know, so these are the things that we are missing. But you also made a very critical point in terms of the culture. Our culture is so suppressive. Had I not, you know, my school of education was done in the U.S., where we began to understand exactly what you're saying, that kids have to be seen and they also have to be heard. And then the United Nations is supporting that now, what they call the three P's, the right of protection, the right of participation, and then the right of, there's another one. You know, but the important thing is that kids have to be in the forefront of what it is that we do. We cannot underestimate them. Now,
hold on for a second, okay. For me. Let me just. We have a number of callers trying to get on the show. Let's see if we can get some opinions from them. Hello, good evening.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening. Your name, where are you calling from, please?
My name is Stephen from Ankesim.
All right, Stephen, your thoughts on this subject, please.
Well, I'm a teacher myself, and it's really of a bother to me that you teach, and the next time you see them in Accra, they are selling pure water. For me, it's about lack of investment in our education system. Skills development, I mean, providing content that is irrelevant in the 21st century needs a lot of money. Our political elites are not interested in that. They are interested in a brick and mortar. The one that you can point to that we'll put in some books that people can vote for. That is what we have now. So it is based on the number of schools you can construct, not about the content of what they are learning in the school. And that's where we are. And for me, it's this about the kind of nation that we want to be in the next 50 years. That Singapore and other countries have leveraged on education to leapfrog their development. And look at what we are doing here.
Thank you very much, Stephen from Mankasim, raising serious questions about how ready we are as a nation to build the kind of education that will take us forward. Let me take just one more call, and then we'll come back to my studio and get my guests to bring this issue to a close. Maybe let me just wrap up at this point. Let me come to you, Araba, to give us your closing thoughts. After a discussion like this, we want to rise from here with a sense of what is the way forward. In a minute, Araba, what should be your recommendation about the way forward?
Seriously speaking, my take is that there are pockets of excellence. And as a nation, we should decide what our priorities are. If we want kids who are thinking, critical thinkers, who are innovative, we want Ghana to be like the Asian tigers, then what did they do right? How did they reverse? Because they were also colonized. And they, in the 60s, they also provided structures for people who fit into the civil service. But somewhere along the line, the balance should shift. What is now secondary may have to be the primary issues. And then we can do better than we're doing now.
All right. Anis, give us your closing thoughts on that.
Yes. You know, whenever the WAEC results come out, or when young people are about to do their WAEC examinations, you'll be surprised the number of phone calls that I get, radio stations and that sort of thing. Especially when questions have been stolen, you know, because everybody wants to do well. But then when we focus on creativity, we realize that you don't need answers for those things. Those are answers that you have to explore yourself.
Right.
That's what we call critical thinking.
So there will be no need for leakage in exams.
Because you don't need it. You know, so what? But then in the Ghana Education Service syllabus itself, part of an assessment is not just the true false, multiple choice, and essay type, but it's also based on projects. And the beautiful thing about projects is that it tells you, yes, you can do it, and you don't need to steal answers to do those things.
Right. Let me take it home from two listeners, one listening from the U.S. and another one that doesn't give us a location. But Janet from Pennsylvania says, yes, parents have a great impact on children. Learning is both formal and informal and doesn't end in the classroom. What we watch, our peers, and our environment all have an impact on our learning. James Tuade ends with a very passionate story about his own disappointment. He says, when I was in secondary school, there was a girl in my class we called Centrosima. Albert, this girl was the best runner in the Eastern region in Tako. I tried to convince the parents to let the girl pursue her talent, and they wouldn't support her. I think parents should really help support their children to realize their potential. And that is James Tuade, a man who sounds very disappointed about Centrosima's talent that was never fully realized. Let me say a big thank you to Anis Hafa, arguing for the motion that our educational system destroys talents, and Araba Middleton-Butchery arguing against the motion. And I can tell you what, both of them are on the same side. I won't tell you which side they are on, but
you won.
That's for another day.
There was no winning in this.
Next week, we'll continue this discussion, and we'll bring you something very special, very, very special next week. And I want to say, I'm sorry to Daniel. I know you tried reaching us on the show to share your thoughts. We couldn't get through to you, but I'm sure that we can do it again next week. Thank you to all who contributed. And Irene Pras says, great program. I love the bit about kids being seen and also being heard. We must let our children be heard. Let me say thank you to Comfort, to Matthew, and to Amos for putting this together. My name is Albert Okran. Until we come your way again next week with another brutal edition of Pros and Cons and Springboard Your Virtual University. God bless you, God bless you, and God bless you. Thank you, Anis. Thank you, Araba. Good night.